This is the Publix Radio. Good morning. I'm Chuck Hinman in Providence, filling in for Ian Donis for this week's Political Roundtable, joined as usual by Scott McKay, political analyst for the Publix Radio, and Maureen Moakley, professor emeritus of political science at the University of Rhode Island. Our guest this morning is Jim Vincent, the president of the Providence branch of the NAACP. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to Political Roundtable.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
There is so much going on to talk about. Why don't we start with the attention that Providence has gotten with the setup of the Committee for Reparations in the city and what that might entail?
Well, I think that's a misnomer to kind of characterize it that way. I think what the mayor has set up, Mayor Lawser, with the African-American or Black ambassadors, of which I'm a member, is a three-phase approach to dealing with issues dealing with that Black and Indigenous peoples here in Rhode Island. The first phase is to get out the truth about slavery in Rhode Island, the truth about all the different barriers and all the different things that went into what we call institutional racism today that affects Black and Indigenous people. And the second phase would be a reconciliation. People are actually talking about, well, what should we do? There's disparities in health, education, housing, every sector, there's gross disparities between Black and Indigenous and the population at large. And then the other phase is, well, what can we do? Reparations conjures up a negative image with a lot of people, a lot of Americans. So I don't like to use that word because we don't know if it ever gonna, what that's gonna mean. I think to some people it means cash payments to people. It may not mean that at all and probably won't because the city's bankrupt. But it does mean some kind of emphasis in terms of working with communities that have been marginalized in terms of public policy and some of the practices. So I do think that's needed because you want a healthy community. You want all sectors being healthy, not just some sectors.
Maureen, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I agree with Jim, but I don't think the concept, if it's carefully done, of reparations is necessarily a negative. I mean, if you start out with a thoughtful conversation about the, and they're doing this very carefully with the Rhode Island Historical Society, about, you know, the injustices that have been done, and they're already pointing to curriculum reform, which is really important so that we can have this as part of a system where people understand in the long term what these instances were. I think when you get to that point, I wouldn't talk about money. I don't think that's a good idea. But I would talk about, for example, Georgetown gives anybody that has connected with slavery, because they helped build it, they give them scholarships. Well, you know, Brown could do that. In other words, people that you can trace your ancestry, the people that are here. And I see the possibility of targeted compensation in terms of educational opportunities, scholarships, and even, you know, specifically targeted initiatives that helps the Black community. I know a rising tide lifts all boats, but we don't want to get lost in that. There's a lot of poor people. But I think at this particular time, we have to have set aside something so we understand the injustices of Blacks as well as Indigenous people. So I think it's a good idea. I think we're starting in the right direction as long as it's careful and thoughtful and people don't jump to the conclusion that, oh, we're going to give money to everybody.
I mean, I think one of the things we can do is invest in education, particularly higher education. If you look at the history of this post-World War II into the 60s and 70s, and I know this because I'm an ancient guy, but the fact is that we invested in higher education. State universities in those days were free or nearly free, believe it or not, and people didn't have to take on this huge debt, which I think hurts minority folks a lot more than white people, and the reason is because of the intergenerational transfer of wealth is such a huge disparity between Black folks and white folks, and we know that. And I fear that the huge tsunami of red ink that's running through our universities now, we're seeing this is just terrible. And since 2008, we have stopped as a country and as a state, unfortunately, investing what we should be doing in state public higher education. I think that's a substantive thing that people have to understand, because that's the ladder of opportunity in this country. And we really need to double down on our efforts to ensure that everyone who is qualified to go to college gets a chance to do that.
Maureen.
My point is, I agree with everything you say about providing these opportunities the way they used to, especially at state schools. The only point I'm making is, it's great that we help all poor people, and that's a good thing to do. But I think we have to think, in addition to that, more targeted terms about Blacks and Indigenous people here in this state. I think that's important. I don't want that issue getting lost in the larger debate.
Jim.
Yes. I agree with Maureen, and I also agree with you, Scott. But I think, you know, we're putting the cart before the horse in terms of what reparations would look like. We're still in the truth-telling phase, the education phase, the K through 12. Too many people in Rhode Island don't even realize that there was slavery in Rhode Island. So we have to deal with the education of the populace, I think, before we come up with anything. And then we have to have a group of people decide whether or not we should target education. Maybe that might not be something the group of people that are in the room, which is the state, thinks is the best way to go. I mean, I'm not going to assume what's best, and I would caution people from assuming what's best for Black and Indigenous people. But I think everything I've heard, I agree with, and I think that this is a very positive discussion about it, as opposed to some other discussions that really trend negative in a hurry without it even being even discussed.
Well, turning to another question that I have is, we can identify a lot of things that we need to do. This is all happening when there's this huge budget deficit coming down on the state because of the pandemic. How do we get out of that and address some of these things?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you're right. There's a budget crisis. There's the pandemic. But whatever happens, there's going to be resources of some type. And we need to rethink where those resources go, however meager they are. I mean, we can't continue to do the same thing over and over again, because we can see that the results just not working. Just look at the Providence Public Schools as an example. We have to change that paradigm. We have to invest differently. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm just talking about time and practicing policies. So whatever it is, whatever we have, we need to start being intentional and targeted, as Maureen would say, to Black and Indigenous people, the people that are taking it on the chin, the worst here in the state.
One question I have for Jim is a little more concrete and current. And I guess what I'm interested in, we're all appalled, I think, at the things we've seen around the country, the latest, the death of Breonna Taylor. But I'm wondering if some of these Black Lives Matter protests, I think it's great to go to the State House or the police station, but how do you feel about folks who are hassling people on Federal Hill while they're having dinner, or shutting down highways when people are trying to get home from work, and not making it harder for ambulance to get in? Now, doesn't that lead to a backlash? And aren't you a little concerned about the fact that these folks may be alienating people in the middle of one of the more consequential presidential elections of any of our lives?
Well, Scott, you know, tactics are important, and anything that could result in a backlash is problematic. I am not going to decide what's problematic and what's not, but I would agree with your broader point that anything that takes away from the peaceful protests that are for legitimate reasons could be very problematic. So I'm very intentional in terms of what I try to do to try to keep on the issue, which is institutional racism, and I try not to do anything that would deflect from that laser focus that I have in terms of the real problem. And
how do you persuade other people that are your allies, particularly some of the young people who are angry, how do you persuade them to embrace nonviolence in this regard?
It's difficult because people are legitimately angry. I mean, their voices have not been heard. And Martin Luther King said, and I quote, "Rioting is the voices of the unheard." He was peaceful, but he said, if you don't listen to legitimate and obvious wrongs in terms of social justice, then anything could happen because people are that angry and they've run out of options. So I can't say that if I or anybody else says don't do this, people should listen. People have to, I try to lead by example. I don't want to be presumptuous as to say that I can make tell people what, how they should protest and how they shouldn't. I just want to make sure I do what I need to do for the NAACP and myself. I feel more comfortable in that space, but you're right. I don't want to do, I'm hoping nothing happens that deflects from the real issue.
Maureen.
I would just like to add to that. I mean, I agree that you're doing what you can within Rhode Island, and I think we have relatively peaceful demonstrations. They may be annoying, except for the first one, then there's looting. I think your leadership and the Black leadership has been very constructive. My concern is the quote you did used about Martin Luther King. The governor of Oregon used that quote. The place has been burning, okay, for weeks. And the thing is, this provides fodder for, at the national level, for a response from the Republicans, a law and order response, that I think is going to resonate with a lot of voters. Too long across the country, the narrative was these were peaceful demonstrations, these were peaceful demonstrations. You turn on your television, you see buildings burning, that ain't the case. And I think I sympathize with these people that have justifiable grievances, but I think it's going to create a problem nationally in the state, in the election.
Jim.
Maureen, I guess the whole situation is more nuanced because I think the people that I've seen being arrested for burning police cars or defacing property, the people that I've seen being arrested for that are white people. So I would agree, they don't have a legitimate grievance in terms of anti-Blackness or racism. The people that I see doing a lot of the rioting and a lot of the chaos, and I agree that takes away, it adds fodder for the Republicans, are white people. I don't see really Black people that have been aggrieved, really at the forefront of the rioting and any of that violence and burning down of police cars. I see a lot of white people doing that. Now, maybe they're piggybacking on the peaceful protest. And I do think the vast majority of those white people are far right groups, militias, Proud Boys. Those are white people that, you know, are using, I think, Black protests for their own aims because they would love to have a civil war, I think. And they're right wing. So, yeah, I don't know how you stop these right wing white militia groups from causing the chaos that I think we see in Oregon and other places.
I think that's probably true, Jim, but one thing I'm interested in is I've seen some national polling, and it's fascinating to me that older African-American voters are very strongly supportive of Joe Biden. In fact, I can make a pretty good argument that without those voters in South Carolina primary, he would not be the nominee. You look at the numbers, the older Black community trusts Biden, they like him, and yet among younger African-Americans, he still has some convincing to do, and there are some younger folks who don't even think that voting is really all that important. And why do you think we see this dichotomy in the African-American community?
I don't think it's a dichotomy in the African-American community. I think it's a dichotomy in terms of American society, in terms of young and old. I remember being in college, everybody was voting for McGovern. And, you know, older Americans thought McGovern had no chance. But yet we wanted McGovern, you know, so because we were idealistic, we were young, whatever. Black people that are of a certain age, we see Donald Trump as probably the biggest threat in our community in our lifetime. So we felt that the best way to defeat Trump, or I said a year ago, the best way to defeat Trump is to have Joe Biden as the presidential candidate and have Kamala Harris as the VP. That to me would be the best way to defeat Trump. So it's more defeating Trump than choosing Biden, even though there are things that Biden has been about in his career that I accept and I like. There are other things that are problematic. What's our best chance to beating the threat, which is Donald Trump? And then in terms of Black turnout, what would be the best way to do that? And that would be to have a Black female who's probably the best suited for that, Kamala Harris. So we're a very pragmatic community. And I think when we have younger people, they act no different than any other younger people. You know, I mean, you look at young, white people, young, old. I bet you there's a difference there in terms of who they want in the primary.
Well, we are set up to see what happens with that matchup, because that's what's going to occur in November. And believe it or not, we have run out of time. That is really all the time we have. So I want to thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thank you, Chuck.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Jim Vincent of the Providence branch of the NAACP. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck, Maureen, and Scott. Thank you all.
I'm Chuck Henman, in for Ian Donis, and as usual, you can find a lot more on our website, thepublicsradio.org.